extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partner in soccer. It's a special day. Sasha Kleshchen is here. Coming up on the show, history made in Monterrey. The Crew own the entire city. Tigres, let me get that. Rayados, yeah, we took you down too with a big win in Mexico. Sasha and I'll break that one down. What it means for the Crew, what it means for MLS, and what that final in Pachuca is going to look like, oh, in about a month's time. Plus, Danny Higginbotham joins to talk Red Bulls Miami, the second meeting, this time with Messi and Forsberg, and much, much more from both conferences. Danny's been making the rounds, and we appreciate his time. All right, Sasha, let's go. I know, it's hours later. I slept. I drove to the airport twice, and yet here I am, still on the top of the world on cloud nine, the Columbus Crew, not just in the final, but doing something I'm not sure I've ever seen an MLS team do in Mexico, and certainly not against the Gigante. Where's your heart at? Where's your mind at today?
No, I'm pumped. I was, you know, late at night, kids are already in bed. I've got the volume turned down. I'm doing silent fist pumps every time Columbus scores. I was into it. Listen, I think we're all MLS fans when we get down to MLS versus Liga MX in CONCACAF Champions Cup. Over the years, and you said it really well. They did it in style, with class, the Columbus Crew way. That was really awesome to see last night.
Two wins against Monterrey, 2-1 at home, 3-1 on the road, 5-2 on aggregate. I think this is the most impressive series I've ever seen an MLS team play against the Liga MX. And to be fair, we don't have as many examples of that as we might like. But let's start where we always do. Let's just start with the best thing we saw. What is it that really struck you in this match?
But it had to be the second goal from Columbus early in the second half. And a few things come to mind with this goal. It's that at that point in the game, Columbus was through, right? So they didn't need another goal per se. Most teams in that situation would start playing, okay, we got 11 guys behind the ball. When we win it, we're going to play long. Not Columbus, not their style, not their way. They get possession. They have it on the right side of the field. They move it all the way to the left side of the field. Shaberko gets on the ball. Remember, this is a guy who had scored an own goal already in this game. But in true Columbus Crew way, Wilfried Nancy way, put your foot on the ball, suck some defenders out, and then find a line splitting pass to Matan, who had just entered the game as a halftime sub, with tons and tons of time and space to turn and run at the back line. Little slip pass to Rossi. You know, what a goal. This was the epitome of a Columbus Crew goal. But to do it on the road at that point in the game, straw that breaks the camel's back for Monterrey. Awesome.
I thought Rayados in that moment, in many moments actually in the first half, were sort of admitting that they couldn't get pressure to the ball, or that trying to do so was not in their interest. So you saw Rayados drop off and just say, hey, cool, if you guys want to possess in that little stripe right behind the midfield line, we're not even going to attempt to put pressure on this. And I thought in the first half, actually, the Crew had some issues there. It's like they were like, oh, what do we do now? How do we create the space that comes when other teams pressure us? And in the second half, they found a way just to bait them. And in this play, it's the epitome of, as you said, the way the Crew want to play. Overload the right. You see five or six Crew players drawing six Monterrey players into this small box. It's an easy switch out because you have those two central midfielders in Darlington and Aiden who are always ready for that moment. You have width because Yeboah is always going to be riding the sideline. And then when Yeboah got the ball, my brain was like, okay, go. Drive it forward. And he doesn't. He understands. Bounce it back to the center back. Cucho runs into the space. How the hell do you mark these guys? Yeah. And then it's almost like a dummy through to Matan. Cucho's running. Both the fullbacks are high and wide. All three attacking players are interchanging. And it's just everything you want soccer to be.
Yeah.
And you see this team with players that probably couldn't do this 2 years ago in some cases, executing at that level. That's what makes it so freaking special.
The subtle last touch that Shaberko does to bring the ball inside on his right foot and change the angle just by about half a yard, maybe, to give him the angle to make that splitting pass to Matan is it makes the play and it's such a little thing. But if you just watch that goal back, watch that last touch he takes to his right so that he can hit that hard pass on the ground to Matan. Awesome play all around. Really
go watch the Monterey, yeah, go watch the Monterey shape too, just to sort of understand how they're trying to deal with that moment and how they're shifting and where the gap to create that pass comes from. I mean, it's just one of those moments that I'll never forget in Champions League. I'm going to shine a light on the first and third goals, because what struck me in this match, Sach, was feeling like finally for once I was on the other side watching MLS and Champions League, Champions Cup, CONCACAF Champions, whatever you want to call this thing. I felt like I was a fan of like Club America or, you know, Tigres or Rayados. And it was like, yeah, we just, you know, we handle business at home. No big deal. You might still have hope and you captured a little bit early on, but you made one mistake. And when you make one mistake, I'm going to punch you right in the middle of the nose and you're going to reel. And that's what happened when Aiden Morris took that ball off of the defender, off a terrible, terrible decision by Andrade, the goalkeeper. That was a decision MLS teams make. In the very end of the first half, with like literal seconds until the whistle blows, when you have a lead, when you don't need to take a risk, I have seen that happen in many different iterations. It feels like thousands of times. And by God, we got the reward. MLS went into halftime. The crew went into halftime feeling like, this is ours. We got this now. Here's our confidence. Okay, now we're going to slap you upside the head with the second goal. And then the third goal, again, it's just, I've seen it scored so many times before. Hurt Gomez has like six of these against MLS teams. Yep. You have to press forward. We defend. We understand we're creating space on the other side, and it's two passes and a perfect finish, and now we're just waltzing to the final. It felt so good to watch Monterrey berate the referee afterwards. And I don't say that because of them berating the referee, just to see the frustration.
Yep.
That felt good, man. That felt really good.
We've lived it many times, but the Columbus crew took care of business in a way that we haven't seen before. Like I said earlier in the game, I know plenty of teams, almost every team in MLS, that once they took a lead, they would just sit back deep and play on the counter. And Columbus didn't really play on the counter until that last possession when Russell Rowe scores a really good counter-attacking goal. They got possession. They spread the field again. They kept possession. They used their energy wisely. They just played a very mature game.
I think the way they closed the game out also calls back to the progress we've seen. I remember last year on all the shows we did, you know, the crew would perform at this level, have plays at this level, build outs and goals that just left you sort of astounded. And then they give up goals in the final 10 minutes or the final 5 minutes. And they were just dropping points like flies. And then the Orlando game happened. It happened again. They had a bye. Nancy was pissed. And they solved the problem. And they were MLS Cup champions. And this, to me, felt like the highest level execution of this thing that they struggled with, that they couldn't figure out for a long time in Wilfred's first year. And now it's just sort of like, yeah, we got it. The club's in our bag. You know, when the moment comes, we can handle this. It's not overwhelming. We are the ones that embrace discomfort. Like, it's okay. It's okay to be behind the ball. It's okay to defend deep. We have the tools. Yep. And to see an MLS team have all these clubs in the same bag, that's where you start to talk about history and the Columbus crew. Now, Pachuca is standing in front of them. June 1st is the final. It's a single game at Pachuca because of results in the group stage. But let's dive in a little bit to just the historic nature of this. Are there any other runs for MLS teams that jump out to your mind that stand up to this? Other than, of course, the Sounders winning it. But in terms of Tigres, Monterrey, and then potentially Pachuca, we're talking about very rare company.
Yeah, I think it's only Toronto FC. I don't know if you'll know the year better than me, if it was 2017, their run to the final where
I
they
I think
beat.
It was 18 because they came off MLS Cup in the treble and then they couldn't quite get it done and then it all collapsed.
Yep. They beat Club America and Tigres on their road to the final against Chivas, which, you know, they probably should have won that final against Chivas as well. But that run, I think, can only compare to this one where now Columbus has beaten two of the big four or five teams in Mexico along the way in Tigres and Monterrey.
Where does this team stand in history for you right now? Because that's what we're talking about, right?
Yeah, right now, they're not up there yet, but they have a massive opportunity to go down as one of the best teams in MLS history, you know, with last year's MLS Cup win. If they were to win this CONCACAF Champions Cup final and then go on to win one more trophy this season, whether that's League's Cup or the MLS Cup again, I think they would go down as, you know, top three team in MLS history if they were to win Champions Cup and one more trophy this season.
The thing that gets me excited, and I have to sort of hold myself back because Wilfried Nancy could be poached. He could end up in Europe at any time, given the accomplishments and the way that his team plays. But he signed a new contract. And there is an opportunity for this team not just to be continental champions, but to be involved in 2025 in the Club World Cup. And an opportunity for Wilfried Nancy to continue to evolve and build this project to a point in 2025 where there's no better team, Inter Miami included, for MLS to put on a world stage and say, that's us at our best.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to see what this league can be with all the different, you know, cultural variations and competitive variations and the way that we build our rosters, this is our very, very best. And I hope that that possibility for Wilfried keeps him around, because I just want to watch his teams play.
Yeah, I want to see, Columbus playing against Arsenal, Man United, Dortmund, Bayern Munich, any of these teams, Real Madrid, Barcelona, in an actual competitive game where we know what it's going to look like. Like, Columbus won't back down. They will play the exact same way they played last night in Monterrey. And I think they'll surprise a lot of people around the world. So I hope we get to see them on the world stage in that Club World Cup.
I hope so too. What about Wilfried? Like, you've played for a lot of coaches. When you watch this from afar and what he's built, what impresses you the most?
There's a few things that are really impressive just from last night, which is the way he coaches and how it affects his players. So two players in particular, Shaburko, I mentioned earlier, scored an own goal. Nothing really he could do about that own goal. The ball was pretty much going in. He couldn't stop his momentum. But in the back of his mind for the rest of the first half, he's got to be thinking, damn, I scored an own goal and we're pretty much knocked out at this point. The way he comes back into the game and keeps playing his style of play, Nancy's style of play, that shows that coach believes in him, that the coach is telling him, don't worry what happens. It's not about the results. It's about the way we do things. And so him and Aiden Morris, I thought Aiden Morris was probably Columbus's worst player in the first half. I know the field was bad. He had some bad touches. He wasn't on top of his game. He wasn't usual physical dominant midfield player that he was. But that didn't matter either. He came up with the massive play when it needed to happen in the first half. So this tells me one thing about Nancy and what he does with his mentality. Second thing I love from Nancy was he subs off Matan in stoppage time once the game is out of reach, because Matan is the only player on yellow cards with the possibility to be suspended for the final. So he's thinking two steps ahead already. As soon as the game is out of reach, Matan, I know you only played 44 minutes, but you're coming off the field so that you're available for the final. Smart play. And the thing that will go down in history eventually about Wilfried Nancy possibly being one of the best coaches in MLS ever is when the teams in MLS start to be real copycats of his, which we're already seeing a little bit. But I think as the years go on, we're going to see more and more of that, teams trying to play like this Columbus team.
And I think good examples for those of you wondering, like RSL would be an example, the way that they want to have Andres Gomez and Katranas be, you know, these de facto wingbacks, guys that stay really high, stretch the field, provide width and depth. And then you have a center forward, and then two sort of interchangeable attackers behind him. FC Dallas was trying to do it. It didn't really work out. I know some of the attacking principles for the Sounders early on were in a little bit of a copycat, but when you see teams play with their wingbacks extremely high, try to build through two central midfielders, and then have interchange with the attacking players, I mean, where do you think they're getting that? It's not just from Wilfried. It's from modern soccer too. You know, all these different teams and managers that are doing these things, but he is our guy in MLS. And I want to go back to point one. And I think about it like instilling belief in places that perhaps players had not thought to believe in themselves before. Like, oh, that's not me. I'm not that type of player. And I think back to, like, he was talking about Sean Zawadzki last year. And Zawadzki would lose the ball in training as they're trying to do all these things on the back line and attract pressure and play through it and be brave. He'd lose the ball and Wilfried's not blowing up. It's not like a disappointed dad. He's just like rolls the ball back to him. He's like, do it again. You got this. Do it again, you got this. And it's not players that you would expect to have that sort of impact based on their track record. And that he has elevated those players, the Mo Farsis, Alexandre Matan is an incredible example. I mean, Caleb Porter, he basically broke the dude. Like, he was mentally broken. He had to go home to Europe. Had done nothing for the crew. He comes back. He's one of the best, like, attacking midfielders in the entire league. So you just see, you can feel, you can sort of know that there's just a difference playing for Wilfried than anywhere else. And I think the Cucho Hernandez situation is super illustrative as well. It's not just the guys that don't have it in them. It's also Cucho. And when Nancy had a moment where he had to put his foot down, he did it. And it didn't seem, now look, we're on the outside looking in, but it didn't seem to break anything within that group. It actually elevated Cucho, and he's been even better since he returned. So
Cucho was awesome last night.
He's best player on the field, I thought, in both games.
Yeah, no goals, no assists last night, but his impact on the game, hold up play, dribbling out of pressure, good long passing, setting up his teammates, the hard run he makes for the second goal that attracts some defenders. Now he's able, Matan's able to slip the ball to Rossi. All the things Cucho does is, it's like impeccable for this team. It's so good.
It's just fun to watch him, which is a bummer that we don't get to watch him this week and the Crew are on a bye in Major League Soccer, but a very good thing for them. How would you approach this lead up, this month to the final, if you're Wilfried Nancy and this Crew? What would your mindset be?
Well, you know, I got to look at the schedule as to the games coming in. They do need to start piling up some results in MLS. I think it's six straight now without a win. A lot of draws in there for Columbus. But I think depending on the games on a weekend, right? The CONCACAF Champions Cup final will be on the weekend. So they should have a full week's rest and build up into the game. I think it's just more of the same. I don't think anything is going to change. I don't think the mentality of this team is going to change. I think the way that they've gone about things, the things that we hear from Wilfried Nancy, the way he talks about the team, that it's not results driven. It's about the process and getting better every single day and being themselves. So I don't think anything should change for this team. Keep doing what they're doing.
I agree. I think Pachuca is a hell of a test. Maybe a team that many in our neck of the woods aren't super familiar with. It's sort of a team that yo-yos a little bit between basically championship and mid-table. And it depends on when their crop of young talent out of the academy, which they're known for developing, sort of pops out, and when they get the right exports or veteran players to fill in. And right now the mix is really good. Salomon Rondon is just banging in goals. The Venezuelan is has been an incredible signing for them. Eric Sanchez is one of the best young Mexican players in the world. And then Adrisi, the winger, earlier this year when Pachuca handed it to the Union, I remember Jim Curtin saying, hey, that guy's the best guy we've played against or that I've seen in a long time in this region. So you know that the talent's there. You know the tradition is there because Pachuca's won 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 CONCACAF Cups. MLS as a league has won, so let that settle in a little bit, but it's going to be a huge game on June 1st, and the Crew are going to be on center stage. I cannot wait for it.
So it says Columbus actually do have a midweek game that Wednesday at home against New England leading into the final. I would expect full rotation for that game. Rest all your best players. Rest your starting 11. Have them fully ready for that weekend's CONCACAF Champions Cup final.
And fittingly, the game on the weekend that will, it seems, need to be moved, I don't know that for sure, but look, it's on June 1st, you would think, is against the Seattle Sounders, the last team that won this competition in MLS terms. All right, Sash, let's get a couple thoughts on the weekend on match day 12 and then get you on out of here. What are you looking forward to on MLS 360?
What I look forward to every weekend is when all the chaos starts happening and the goals start piling in and Kevin Egan starts interrupting all of us to get us from game to game and goal to goal. But the biggest game of the weekend for me is the Red Bulls at Miami. If we remember a few weeks ago, Red Bulls played Miami without Messi and smashed them at home 4-0. And so a totally different game this time around. Messi will be back. Forsberg will be back for the Red Bulls. I think it's going to be a really good game down in South Florida. We're going to see if the Red Bulls kind of have the antidote to this Miami team and can play a physical, athletic game against Inter Miami.
I'll throw out some nerd choices. How about Vancouver, Austin? Just want to see if Austin is for real. 4 out of 5 wins, but you got to go to Vancouver. That's a very, very tough place to play. And then I'm watching very closely what's going on for Montreal and Cincinnati because some news this week that we'll dig into probably on Monday just a little bit more. Aaron Bupinza broke his jaw. Or somebody broke it for him. I don't know. I guess we'll find out. But he's out for 6 to 8 weeks, and it's been a disastrous, disastrous start to his time in Major League Soccer as a record-signing DP for Cincinnati. And then Mathieu Chouinard is requesting a trade, Sasha. What do you think of that? Right after the window closes, there's a lot of awkward waiting time between now and when the summer window opens.
That is very awkward, but I feel for Chouinard. Been asking for a new contract. Is coming out of contract at the end of the season. I do believe he has one option year for 2025, but he's underpaid for what he does for the team, for how good he's been playing for the past year and a half for this Montreal team when you compare him to other center midfielders around the league. So I think Montreal will come to their senses and they can agree to a contract. So we'll see what happens, but very interesting.
It is interesting. And you know what else is interesting? We have the club roster profiles released today by MLS comms. If that's just mumbo jumbo to you, no offense. It was to me when I first saw it, but then you see the PDFs of all the teams, all 29 teams, all the roster designations, who's a DP, who's Tam, who's a DP in name only that can be bought down. Who are U22s? What are the contract situations? What's the final year of guaranteed terms? What's the final year of the option terms? It's very, very interesting to dig through. And as soon as I saw those come out, I went and looked at Montreal. Look at the TAM players for Montreal. Mathieu Choinier is not among them. And if I was him, given my performances, I would be saying, that ain't right. You got to fix it. Now they'll have to figure it out between the player and the club. All right, Sash. We'll see you on Saturday.
All right, man. See you soon.
Oh, man. Feels good to talk about an MLS team in the CONCACAF Champions Cup final. The Crew have done it. We'll see if they can finish the job and make history alongside the Sounders. Big thanks to Sasha Kleshchen for joining. Always enjoy chatting soccer with him, whether it's on air, on extra time, or just behind the scenes in the green room on Saturday nights. A guy that I enjoy listening to is Danny Higginbotham. Great pairing with Steve Cangelosi. They've got a big game this weekend. Red Bulls heading down to Inter Miami. Let's take a listen to Danny's thoughts on that big match, plus much, much more from around Major League Soccer. Very pleased now to welcome Danny Higginbotham onto Extra Time, a partner in soccer. Danny, I've enjoyed all of your broadcasts this year. You and Kanji make an A-plus team in my mind. Welcome to the show, just a night after basking on the banks of the Delaware.
Yeah, the weather was very different. I think the first game, obviously, I think if you look back in hindsight, probably shouldn't have started. You know, you could see fish, you could see ducks, geese, everything on the pitch at the time. So yesterday was very different. And, you know, it was a real good game. And just talking about, you know, obviously working with Steve as well. He's a joy to work with. And the shows you're doing at the weekend, you know, I've had more of an opportunity to watch them this season because we've had some afternoon games, some Sunday games, and it's been brilliant the way that you all go about it, the energy that you bring. So, you know, full credit to the way that that's going.
Well, that's why you pay a compliment at the top of the show, right? You're just expecting that payback.
That's
to
it.
Come. I appreciate it. I appreciate it.
And it works. Your, you
know, scratching backs, et cetera. Let's talk about the game last night, and we'll start with the winning team. I had argued on wrap-up that Brian Schmetzer and the Sounders were under pressure, and that wasn't just a Schmetzer thing. That was a Sounders thing. The players on this team are at a level with the accomplishments, with the track record, that when things go bad, you have to look just as much at them, perhaps more than at the coach. And here we come into Philadelphia, a place where very few teams win, and they're singing jingle bells at the end of the night, and the pressure is just a little bit abated for now. What do you think it was like coming into this match for the Sounders in that locker room? Coming off a loss, 2 days, traveling cross country.
Yeah, we spoke to Brian Schmetzer on the Monday, and I asked him, you know, about the DC United game. Took the lead, then obviously they had the sending off, and I didn't think that the game and the result, sorry, was a fair reflection of the game. I thought even with 10 men, they looked like the better team. And he said to me, he said, we were in the dressing room afterwards and nobody had their heads in their hand. There was this belief because they knew they should have got something. And I think some of the results haven't really, you know, gone the way of the performances. They defensively, we know they're strong. They're having a real problem putting the ball into the back of the net. Before last night, they scored 10 goals and 5 of them had come in one game. And then what we saw yesterday was something that we don't tend to see too much from Seattle. It was a team that knew Philadelphia Union were going to press. So they went over the press. They went over the press. And we know with Brian Schmetzer, we know with Seattle, the way that they play, they're more of a possession-based team. But yesterday they weren't, and they got joy from that with Leo Chu, with Jordan Morris. Rui Diaz, I thought, was absolutely magnificent. His not just his goals, but his overall performance and his movement. And when you look at this team, I think you have to go back to 2016 when Schmetzer took over, I think, after 20 games. Christian Roldan was in that team. Jordan Morris was in that team. Stefan Fry was in that team. That was a team that, you know, had struggled. I think they'd lost 12 of their opening 20 games. They went and won MLS Cup. So they've got a group there that has the know-how, knows how to get it done. And they've been unfortunate with injuries, red cards. They've shot themselves in the foot at really, you know, dangerous times, really important times in games. So I think that was a huge bounce-back game for them that will set them up for the season now.
I agree with you on basically all these points. The one thing I would add in 2016 is the guy that walked in the door was Nico Ladero.
Yeah,
Ladero, for many years, seemed to be the guy that set sort of the competitive baseline, whether it be in his preparation or the way he approached big matches or just the pressure he put on players around him. I think it's now time for that group to sort of take it on their own. Like, who's going to be the Nico Ladero? And I don't have any doubts that that player exists in the locker room. It's just your point. Injuries may have robbed them of that presence of the Joao Paulos. That seems like a decent candidate. Rusnak, just from a difference-making perspective, no Pedro de la Vega. That was the big swing. And to have it basically be bad on the, you know, dugout waiting to be swung is pretty difficult. Is this like that 16 season for you? Is this sort of, hey, beginning was a blip, let's show our real selves? Or is it going to be a little bit of a struggle to get back to that top, best in Western Conference level?
I think there's obviously the difficulties because they are, in my mind, I don't think they have available to them at the moment a true number 10. You know, we've seen them play 4-4-2. We've seen them go with two up front. Christian Roldan, he played in that 10 position yesterday. We've seen Rusnak play there as well. And I think at times that can be difficult for them. But what I would say is that MLS, because it's such a unique league, it affords you a poor start. We saw with SKC last season, you know, I don't think they won any games in their first 10. Went on, made the playoffs, beat the best in the West in St. Louis, and best of three games, beat them in two games. So I think this is a Seattle team that when they're firing on all cylinders, defensively they're strong. I like, obviously, the midfield, you know, the plays that they have in there. I would be more concerned if I'm Brian Smetza, if I'm seeing a team that's not creating chances. They've created a lot of chances. They just need to be more efficient in front of goal. And now you look at them, they've scored five in a game. They go to Philadelphia Union, scored three. And they could have scored four or five against Philadelphia Union as well. So I think if you're Brian Smetza, you're looking at it and you're thinking to yourself, that's the game they've been waiting for. Because I think they threatened to do that, but then created their own problems for themselves and at times been their own worst enemy. So I think with Smetza now, we'll be hoping that, okay, this is the start of things now. Let's go. We've shown what we're capable of, going to one of the toughest teams in the league, to their home stadium, and beating them, which is a massive result for them.
Huge game on Sunday for the Sounders. Absolutely massive. Tough 8-game stretch, but it'll be at home against the LA Galaxy. And then I believe 5 of the next 7 are away, and they're basically all against Western Conference playoff teams, the elite. So Sounders have a chance to claw their way right back up the table, and this is what they needed on Tuesday. It is not what the Union needed, though, Danny. A 3-2 loss and this semi-bizarre, I say semi, and that's ironic, a just bizarre circumstance, right? The Tuesday game, the way it started, the rosters that they could choose from. What did Jim Curtin learn in this game about his team? What did he learn over the last couple of days, actually?
I think that there will have been a huge amount of frustration at halftime. You know, with Jim Curtin, I know him reasonably well. And the big thing that stuck out to me for the first 45 minutes is that if you have the name Philadelphia Union, and next to it you have energy, you have desire, you have discipline, you have work rate, you add all of those things together. That's what they are first and foremost. They were everything but those things in the first half. It was really, really poor. And it was like a Seattle team had come and thought, right, okay, this is our chance to win. Whereas I think it was a Philadelphia Union team in that first 45 minutes that just thought, we just need to turn up to win this game. And, you know, when Philadelphia Union aren't at their best as in terms of their running off the ball, the energy, the pressing, then they don't look a special team. Because with Philadelphia Union, it is, I know Daniel Gosdag obviously broke the record yesterday of Sebastian Latour becoming the all-time goal-scoring leader for them in all competitions. But it's more about the collective. And within this Philadelphia Union team, it's not a team where you can have 7-8 players, you know, playing okay and maybe 2-3 off. Everybody has to be on the game. And, you know, the substitutions were made at halftime. Badoya was brought on, made a difference. Jack McGlynn was brought on, made a difference. Kai Wagner was brought on, made a difference. And I think that's probably what I would say about Philadelphia Union is that I think Jim Curtin, I think at times, and I've said this to him personally, becomes a victim of his own success. You know, we're now at the start of, well, we're into the 2024 season, and their highest transfer that they've paid is just over $2 million. Now, with all the goodwill in the world, you see teams now, they've got numerous players of that price on the bench for them. And the issue is that Philadelphia Union, in my mind, they have to release the shackles. They have to spend a little bit more money because you look at their starting 11. I think their starting 11 is comparable to most teams within MLS. But we know what MLS is like. It's like most leagues. Sometimes games will be won and lost off the bench. And that's, for me, is where it can be a little bit of an issue for Philadelphia Union if they get injuries to key players. So it will be interesting to see what happens in terms of, you know, the summer market for them. What happens with Carranza? What happens with the likes of McGlynn, the likes of Sullivan? Are they able to bring players in? Are they going to go and spend a bit more money? Because if anyone deserves to be able to spend a bit more money, I think it's a manager like Jim Curtin.
I couldn't agree more. There is a ceiling that you reach, especially in this era of Major League Soccer, and the Union have bashed their heads into that ceiling over and over. A great team that couldn't get what they ultimately want. And when you look at the teams that win MLS Cup, year over year over year, you look at the relative investment, you look at the star players that they can field and the depth, and it's in a different level. I think the Union can be that team. I would love to see them go out in the summer and do this. What piece would you add to the group? Let's just pretend. Let's pretend we've got, I don't know, let's just say because the new transfer record was set for San Jose at $6 million. We've got $6 million, Danny. Where would you go?
I think, obviously, it's dependent on what happens with Carranza. You know, I think there's a lot of suitors for him. He's been outstanding since he came to the club. But yeah, I
just,
think
just piece some of that off for his salary, for his DP salary, right?
Okay, then I am going for a goal scorer. I'm going for a goal scorer because what we saw, I think it was the 2022 season. You had Uwa, you had Garzdag, and you had Carranza, and things weren't going great. And then they beat DC United 7-0 at home, and then the three of those players just clicked. They clicked. It was incredible how well they clicked. The rest of the team then clicked, and obviously it was the season when they got beat by LAFC in MLS Cup in the final on penalties. And the problem is that I think if you spoke to most of those players that were playing in that consistent 11 every week, I think if you said to them, when was your best season? I would probably say that 95% of them would say that 2023 season. And that's the problem. You're going to have peaks. You're going to have low times as well. So what you do need is this consistent performer. They've had it with Daniel Garzdag. But if you can get a consistent, you know, centre forward that's going to put the ball into the back of the net on a consistent basis, because with Uwa, when he's great, he's great. But at times he misses that consistency, and I think he needs that consistency within his game. So that would be the piece that I would add, because by hook or by crook, with Jim Curtin, more often than not, he says, we bend, but we don't break. And that is more often the case, because defensively, they've got some really, really good pieces. And I think to add on to that, which is probably sort of another conversation as well, is that if you're a top player at Philadelphia Union, what's going to keep you going? What's going to get you more excited? What's going to make you feel more galvanized is if you go and bring a big piece in. Because I can tell you from first-hand experience, when I was playing, if we were, you know, just going along nicely and things like that, all of a sudden we bring a game changer in. All of a sudden it's like, wow, yeah, we're stepping up. We're going to the party. This is a club now that can go to that next level. And I think it's as big for the club as it is for the players that are involved in the squad as well.
Some of those swings. I mentioned Baraboo. That's sort of a bargain. Hey, can we get more out of what we paid? Marcus Anderson might be in that as well. And those have worked for the Union. Let's not like slag those signings. That's part of building a roster that can win MLS Cup. Like 1 through 30 in this era, you need to be able to fill those spots. You mentioned hook and crook. Well, injury is a theme in every single season. It's not just, hey, who can we change the game with off the bench? It's who has to be on the bench because we don't have room for them in the starting 11. One place that's always been sort of locked down for the Union is goalkeeper, and Andre Blake has been absolutely one of the best in the league for a long time. Injuries seem to be a little bit of an issue for him right now, and then he had a sort of a cryptic Instagram post last night. Something about, you know, when you're not happy, you have to move on. I'll go find the exact words because I don't want to misquote Andre in any way on that one, but it just seems like things aren't going quite right. Do you think there's a world where Andre Blake and the Union aren't together, maybe at the end of this season or in the near future?
Oh, you would hope not. You would hope not. He is such a pillar for that club. He's a Philadelphia Union legend, along with the likes of Bedoya as well. So you would hope not. I think that the one thing is, and like if I was to say to you, 2021 season, 2022 season, and even a lot of, you know, quite a bit of last season, if I was to say to you, okay, Philadelphia Union are playing at the weekend, you could tell me their back four. And you could tell me the goalkeeper. And I think there's been a lack of consistency. I think we've seen with Elliot and Glesnes, arguably one, if not the best, centre-back partnership in MLS in recent seasons. Damien Lowe's come in now. All of a sudden, he's asking a question. So there's been a little bit of chopping and changing there. Wagner's been in and out. He's had a few injuries. Then the right-hand side, it was Baizo. Harriels now seems to have made that position his own. And I think for a goalkeeper, when you don't have that consistency in front of you, and a lot of it is no fault of the team's own, is no fault of Jim Curtin whatsoever. They've just been unfortunate with injuries that they've had in key positions. Glesner's missed a lot of towards the end of last season. Then obviously he's still, I think, still getting up to speed. So it's a difficult one. Is it a situation where Blake looks at it? Let's put it this way. If I was a senior player at Philadelphia Union and I know how much the players care, I know how strong the dressing room is, I know how good Jim Curtin is, nothing's going to make me happier than to see reinforcements that can be that difference maker. And I think that's the key to everything here, because I think the players that are there that have been there for a while now, I think the coach as well, they've deserved it. They've shown what they're capable of, and they've done it on next to nothing is in terms of finances. You know, they were just, what, a Gareth Bale header away from winning MLS Cup right at the end of injury time in extra time. So now it's a case of, okay, can we get some backups? We've seen freshen what other clubs up. Are doing. Yeah, and I think the thing is as well, as a player, people always say you don't care what's going on at other clubs. Yes, you do. You see what's going on at other clubs, and you see teams that aren't as good as you going and bringing big players in, being difference makers. And I think that that's something that probably, you know, a few of the players at Philadelphia Union probably look at it and go, you know what, if we could have a difference maker, it would just rise everything up. And I think it's absolutely vital that they're able to do that.
Combine that with maybe some hard feelings that were left over from the Alejandro Bedoya stuff from the offseason of just saying, hey, we're here, we're great, make us truly championship caliber, help us out here. By the way, that quote from Andre, I believe it was on his Instagram, was, when you're no longer happy, it's time. Now, that could be about literally anything. That could be about what he had for dinner. Whatever. We'll leave that where it lies and talk about a team that is reinforcing no matter what happens, it seems. That's Inter Miami. Gosh, Danny, I think I've beat this one to death. I'm curious if you have a new wrinkle on Inter Miami we should dig into.
So, Do you want to look at it at the angle of if you're playing against Miami, or do you want to talk from Miami side of things?
No, I like that. I like that first angle. Yeah. Let's go that route. What's bouncing around in your mind?
Okay. So obviously I've watched them quite a few times this season. I've covered them as well. And I think they've conceded first in 8 of the 11 games. And New England was a prime example. Was it like 35, 36 seconds? And then New England for the next 6 or 7 minutes, you know, they look decent. And I thought to myself, okay, they're here for this game, even though they had obviously injuries, they had illnesses. You can't defend a lead against Inter Miami. It's as simple as that. Do not try it. That's my biggest takeaway. And I think the one result that obviously went against Inter Miami this season was Red Bulls. Now people say, well, Messi was missing. We know that that's going to have a huge effect on any team. You know, arguably the greatest ever player that's played the game. But Red Bulls took the lead. They went for more, and they kept going. And, you know, you look at this Inter Miami team, and it's, what do you do? You say, okay, well, we've taken the lead now. We're going to sit back. We're going to sit deep. We're going to be compact. You don't think that Busquets can pass a ball through the eye of a needle. You don't think Messi can do that. It's not going to work. And I think one of the things I always used to look at with Barcelona, the great Barcelona team, which had obviously Xavi, Iniesta, Busquets, Messi, the whole lot of them going forward, I came to the conclusion it was stop Busquets, stop Barcelona. That for me was what it was. Because when the ball is at Messi's feet, sorry, it's game over. So you have to starve him of that possession. And I think what teams have done, they've taken the lead against Miami, and they've said, right, okay, we're going to defend this league now. We're going to sit really deep. We're going to play in a 4-5-1, and we're going to frustrate them. You cannot frustrate this team, because they have players that can see passes that we'll probably see next week. That's how good they are. So I think what you have to do, if you do get the lead against Inter Miami, you've got to force them back. You've got to force them back and say, right, we want to get that second goal. Red Bulls did an incredible job against Busquets. A phenomenal job against Busquets at Red Bull Arena when they won 4-0. And yes, Messi was missing. But what they did between Lewis Morgan and Van Zaire, they man-marked Busquets. So every time he received the ball, he was facing his own goal. He didn't have the ability to turn, and he didn't have the ability to find space because how aggressive Red Bulls were. Now, if you want to be a team that's going to sit off and say, okay, we've got the lead, now we'll defend what we have, you're gonna see what's happened to so many MLS teams so far this season. I've taken a lead against them and then surrendered. So that would be my one takeaway if you're playing against Miami.
I also think even if you want to be more aggressive, let's say, with a lead against Miami, that doesn't always necessarily mean that you have to have the ball, to your point.
No.
It's more about just keeping them out of the spaces that they're comfortable in. And if Busquets, to this point against New England, is just posted up inside your half with his head up, and Lionel Messi can use Robert Taylor as a decoy. I mean, I don't think Robert Taylor knew he was a decoy on that pass. I don't think he knew. Robert Taylor makes the run, and you can just see Messi, having set up Marc-Anthony Kay this entire play, just understand it's right here, Sergio. And Sergio, from years, understands. I mean, what else can you say? I mean, I just feel like sometimes we're doing play by play with Messi, because everything within that play is so otherworldly that it's almost hard to believe that he's doing it, and doing it with the consistency that he's doing it. He's my MVP, Danny. I don't know if you got Chicho Arango in that fight, but I don't even have anybody in the fight with Lionel Messi right now.
Yeah, I think when I look at a player like Messi, and one of the things that people have said, oh, well, you know, his age rise and things like that. He conserves so much energy. He's got 7-8 yards in his head. So he doesn't have to go and, you know, use a ridiculous amount of energy, because what he does, you know, and I say about all the great players over the years, for the first, one of the things I would be really interested to see if we could see this is how many touches does Messi have of the ball in the first 10 minutes? Because I'm convinced it's not many. I know it wasn't many against New England, because I think what he does the first 10 minutes, he's doing all this. Yeah, he's doing all this algebra. He's doing this geography in his head. He's got his sat nav going and going, right, okay, where are the spaces for me? And that's what he does. And he's a conserver of energy that when he gets on the ball, then he can be explosive. And he's just such a unique player. And I think he can play. Obviously, it's how long he chooses to, but I think he can play for a number of years yet, because he's just such an intelligent player. But yeah, just going back to the point, when you have players like Messi, when you have players like Busquets, if you try and sit against them, unless you're the great Atletico Madrid team under Simeone years ago that I think beat them in the semi-final going towards the Champions League final, unless you're that type of team and you've got the likes of Godin in your team, you cannot do that, because he is just on another level, and will find time, will find space, and his mate Busquets will find him easily as well.
You're calling this game Miami hosting Red Bulls. So at Chase Stadium, it's 7:30 p.m. Eastern on Apple TV. I believe that's a free game as well. I could be wrong. Mm. So go check that match out. Let's one more question. Which trophy are Miami most likely to win? Which one? Most likely to win. League's Cup, Supporters Shield, MLS Cup.
I'm gonna go with MLS Cup. I'm gonna go with MLS Cup, but you wouldn't say that they can't go and win all three. You know, right. I think the problem is, and a number of clubs are going to have this, League's Cup, they're going to have a number of players away, you know, and I think a whole host of teams are going to be affected with that. But in terms of MLS Cup, the Supporters Shield, I think they have the ability to do that. They've got greater strength in depth now. I think the younger players are going to help out the senior players as well as the season goes on. Suarez, you know, he comes into the team, then he's out of the team and things like that. What an unbelievable player he is to bring off the bench. Or if you want to start him, you know, get a good 55, 60 minutes out of him. So they have the ability now. They have the squad. One of the things that does concern me is that they still do concede a lot of goals. They give the ball away in some pretty crucial areas because they're an expansive team. But as of yet, other than Red Bulls, not really too many teams have taken advantage of that when Inter Miami have near enough been at their strongest.
Well, Red Bulls got an opportunity again, this time away from home. There won't be, well, it's Miami or Fort Lauderdale, so it could be a driving rainstorm. We don't know that. tell me about your first impressions of Sandro Schwartz, because I've been very impressed, both interpersonally, but also with his sort of tactical ideas and a little bit of a tweak game bottle for the Red Bulls. What do you see when you watch the Red Bulls play this year?
I think first and foremost, Sandro Schwartz, he's brilliant. Love chatting to him. You know, we've covered a few of his games now. We covered them against Miami. We covered them in the win against Cincinnati away as well. And he loves talking about football. He loves talking about how he sees the game. I was fortunate enough to have a one-on-one chat with him, and we just went in so many different directions about how he saw the game. And it's great for somebody like me, because everybody sees the game in a different way, but if you can get an understanding how a manager sees a game, and then you see that play out in front of you, it's brilliant to see. As in terms of what I think he's done to this Red Bulls team, I think they're still a pressing team, but I think it's I think it's more orchestrated. It's not just players flying all over the place. There will be a trigger. And instead of one player just going and being played around and being exhausted for the next 2 or 3 minutes, it's this collective press where the front four will go. And then obviously Stroud getting injured, I think that's a huge blow. And I think it's a bigger blow than a lot of people may think, because his partnership with Amaya was magnificent. Edelman obviously coming in, you know, that is a bonus still, because he's such a good young player. So what happens is the front four will go and press, and then one of the two will go and press as well, dependent on who that partnership is. And they'll go and press high. If they can't win the ball, then they'll get back behind it. So that part of the press is still there. But what I love about this Red Bulls team, which is so different than Red Bulls team in recent years, when they get the ball, there's actually a plan and they know what to do with it. And I think if you look at Red Bulls over recent seasons, it was, if you can be nil-nil with them at 65, 70 minutes, you'll go on and win the game because they exhaust themselves. Now they have the breather with the ball at their feet. All of a sudden, we look at Van Zaire. He's an intelligent player, but what he's got now is more intelligent players around him. He's got the likes of Forsberg. Lewis Morgan is like a new signing. I'm absolutely delighted to see him back in the team. Carmona's coming into his own. Amaya, you've got Tolkien. You've got players that have got good use of the ball. And I think that's been vital towards them this season. There actually looks as though there's a plan in place when they're in possession. And it can be measured or it can be counter. And if I'm a Red Bulls fan, I'm looking at them and I'm thinking, we're in a good place. We're going to create a lot of problems for a lot of teams. And, you know, you're getting more excited now. You only have to look at Red Bull Arena in the last game. You know, it's people are turning up more now. And I think the fans are really enthralled to see what happens as well. So, yeah, I can't speak highly enough of Sandro Schwartz. I think it's been brilliant the way he's gone about things and what he's got the players doing.
I agree. I think the thing about the setup right now that strikes me, and it's what you said about lack of 100%, but it's more considered. It's more targeted. There aren't those moments where the game gets a little bit out of control. It feels to me like they're very sure of what the defensive structure is behind the ball in the press, and then they want to be very narrow and direct when they do go. But they don't need the ball all the time. In fact, they're almost more dangerous sometimes when you have the ball and exposed spaces. So it's interesting. And he's changing up. He straight up said, I can't press like that all year long. Nobody can. Not in these environments, not in any league, really. So he's making some changes. You mentioned Lewis Morgan there. Boy, without Lewis Morgan right now, they'd be in a little bit of trouble, because chance creation, to my eye, still isn't at the level that it could be at. But Morgan is having the season that you would dream about if you're Sandro Schwartz.
I'm delighted for Lewis Morgan, because I know how difficult it was for him last season. You know, spoke to him on a few occasions. Obviously, he's a Scottish guy as well, and he fits the Red Bulls' DNA perfectly. But I think what made me feel more about him with his injuries as well was myself and Steve Cangelosi, we covered the two games really last year, which were tough for him. I think the Orlando game where he'd come back, he went off early and he was in tears at home. They lost that one, I think 3-0. And then the League's Cup game against Philadelphia Union, I spoke to him before the game and he was on the bench predominantly if it went to penalties. It went to penalties, his penalty was saved. And he said the pain after taking the penalty was just excruciating. And I know firsthand as a player that when you're injured, there is no worse feeling. But when you're injured and you can't at times figure out what the problem is, because it's such a unique type of injury, then it becomes even more difficult. So to see him back now, to see him back to his best, to see the relationship and the partnership that he's now built with Van Zaire, which I think is up there with one of the best partnerships in MLS, is in terms of, you know, they suit each other because they very much look at the game differently. And, you know, the positive of one of the players is maybe a little bit the negative of the other. So between the two of them, they bounce that around.
Walk me through that partnership in your eyes.
So what I would say to anybody that wants to know about the Van Zaire Lewis Morgan partnership, go and watch Red Bulls against Inter Miami. And in particular, watch the first goal. And that will tell you all you need to know about this partnership, which is Morgan stretches the game, Van Zaire gets on the ball. So and how I mean about the positive side about is in terms of one player's strengths becomes another player's weakness, is that you've got Van Zaire that drops. He's dropping deep. He sort of plays in that number 10 role a lot of the time. He'll drop into the 10 position, drag a centre back out with him. Van Zaire doesn't necessarily want to stretch the game. He'll do it at times, but by doing that, he's dragging a centre back out. Well, what does that do? It leaves a space for Morgan to get into. Vice versa, Lewis Morgan stretches the game. when he stretches a game that creates space for Van Zaire. So anybody that wants to understand the relationship between Van Zaire and Lewis Morgan, just go back and watch the first goal from the start of the build-up, the first goal against Inter Miami, and that will tell you all you need to know about that partnership. You don't even have to see another goal between the two of them, because that is them in perfect harmony.
There's your homework assigned by Mr. Higginbotham, so go check that one out. Danny, you've been all over the place. You and Kanji are on the road, certainly. You were at the in Austin for this LA Galaxy game, so yeah. I'm going to give you two sides of the coin. What did Austin prove against the Galaxy? And did the Galaxy show us a weakness that could affect them down the line?
Yeah, so I'll start with the home team first. I think everybody looks at Austin. They look at them as this possession-based team, which I think, you know, they've tried to do. They've tried to be this possession-based team, playing out from the back, you know, playing through the thirds of the pitch and then, you know, scoring a goal. But I think what we saw at the weekend against LA Galaxy was a team that can play in transition. I think the addition of O'Brien has made them more of a threat going forward on the counter-attack. But what I would also say as well is that you look at the number nine position, Rubio. His movement enables this Austin team to play deep if they need to, because he's not a centre-forward that's going to go and stretch the game. And the amount of times in the first half and in the second half against Galaxy that he would drop deep, be connected to the midfield, meaning that the rest of the team could drop a little bit deeper, there was never any isolation. And then when the ball was played forward, Rubio would hold on to it. All of a sudden, you've got Driussi joining in. You've got O'Brien joining in. And then you're looking at this team and thinking, okay, yes, they can be possession-based, but I tell you what, they have the ability now to be this transitional team which can cause any team problems. And they did that from the first minute to the last minute regarding Galaxy. And with Galaxy, I don't know whether you agree, but obviously, you know, you're gonna miss a player like Jovalich. Paintsill, obviously one side of him and Peck the other. One of the issues that I think Galaxy have at the moment, they are a high pressing team, a very high pressing team. And that means at the front three wanna go, two of your midfield three wanna go, your fullbacks wanna go. But the problem is, I don't think the centre backs are too comfortable doing that. The centre backs do not want to do that. And I've been in that position myself where I've been playing on in a pressing team and I'm one of the older players, and you do it, but you feel uncomfortable because you're leaving so much space behind. And the knock-on effect from that is that they concede so many goals from set pieces. And one of the problems has been they've been getting caught in transition, and it's last-ditch tackles, it's fouls that are occurring then. That leads to the set pieces, whether it be free kicks, whether it be corners, that's leading to goals. So I think that's one of the things that I look at, that if you're going to play against this Galaxy team on their day, a match for anybody. They are some individual brilliance, but they can be caught on the turnover. But I also think when you look at them, and speaking to Greg Vanney, this is a team that they now have another way of playing. And I think the players are starting to understand, starting to figure out that they can now be one of the best counter-attacking teams in the league.
I was going to say, but if I was playing against them, I would try to take that away every single time. No space for you. Like, it's no space for you, because you're in your most critically dangerous position when, to your point, your defenders are high up the field, your fullbacks have decided they're going to join the attack, and we have all sorts of space to run into and 1v1 battles that we think we can win with physicality. So I think the Galaxy are going to see a lot of what Austin did. I mean, Austin's doing that at home. The Galaxy are going to see a lot of that, and we know that they can build and score with the ball. We saw that last year, but it was the same exact rest defense and center backs who are, no offense, I'm a 30-year-old man as well. Like, I understand those guys are at the end of their career, but you might have to put them in a better position, and you might have to force, you know, Jalen Neal and the new Colombian center back in at times if you know that you're going to have a lot of the ball and be advanced.
I think also one of the key things as well, Andy, is that if you're Galaxy, you know the way that you want to play. You know you have the ability now to spring on the counter-attack incredibly well. But you have to earn that right first. So it's all about getting that first goal.
Yep.
Because if the opposition is scoring the first goal, then have a guess what's going to happen. They're just going to sit back even deeper. And any pace that's within that team is just going to be broken down. So they're another team. I look at them, I think they're in a great place. I think they're evolving as a team. And you look at where they were last season, you know, it was a really, really poor season. You look at where they are now, it's been a really good start for them. Two DPs. DPs, you know better than me how important DPs are in this league. And the two DPs that have come in particular in the wide positions, they're the difference makers, and they're going to be there or thereabouts come the end of the season.
Absolutely right. So let's talk about some DPs in Atlanta. Thiago Almada was arguably the best player in the whole league last year for long stretches. Yakumakis was the most sort of, you know, just going after a goal scorer. But it seems flat. I know Gigi's hurt. It just doesn't seem like they're flying in any way. What's going on with them?
So this is a team I've covered a few times this year, and obviously covered them a lot last year. This is a team that is, I don't think lost is the best word, but they're probably, they're stumbling a little bit in transition. And I don't mean transition on the football field. I mean transition is in terms of style. So one of the things that stood out for me this season is that they're a team that loves to dominate the ball. Loves to dominate the ball, have done, but two of their three wins this season, they've had less possession. And what they've done, they've said to Yakumakis, listen, we want you to stretch the game more. He's great at stretching the game. He can link up. And then all of a sudden you have the likes of Lobjanice. He'll stretch the game with him. You've got Brooks Lennon, who I think, you know, has to be in the US men's national team. That's another story. I think he's magnificent. Then that creates extra time and space for Almada to then get on the ball. But I think what's happening at times is that some of the players aren't necessarily doing what they're expected of them, but part of this evolving. And the one thing that any player will tell you is when you're playing a specific way, then all of a sudden the manager's saying, it's not that he doesn't want the ball, but he's now looking at other ways to win. I think when you've been a team that's been so used to dominating the ball game after game after game, and then all of a sudden you say, okay, well, let's try this a little bit more to take us to this next level, because they have the players for it. I think when that isn't working as a player, I think as a human being, anything that you're doing, you revert to type. So what can happen if things aren't going well? All of a sudden, you may still have Yakumakis stretching a game. You may still have Lobjanice stretching a game. You may well have Almada looking to get in that space in between the opposition midfield and the defense. But your defense is now playing out from the back because maybe they're a little bit uncertain of it. And that's what it comes down to, because I look at the players in the positions that they've got at the moment, and there's not many players that I'd look at and think, oh, if we could just replace him with another player. They've got a team that has to be challenging for MLS Cup. I think it's a great squad now. I think it's a great starting 11. I think you've got difference makers on the bench. But I think it's just a case now, they're trying to evolve a little bit. I think the one thing that stands out, same as last season, their away form needs to improve. Their away form has been really bad. And, you know, I think they've had two draws and two losses this season. But it's just a case of getting it to click as in terms of evolving a little bit. And when they do, when they're at their best...
The ceiling is... all the way at the top, basically.
Oh, it's... I would honestly say when they're at their best, along with Columbus, they're the two teams I love to cover because they're so exciting, so pleasing on the eye, so many game changers, so many difference makers. And, you know, if they can get that right, then they're going to be another huge contender as well for MLS Cup.
Atlanta fans love to hear that. They just don't love looking at the standings right now and not seeing it reflected back at them. Currently in ninth are Atlanta United, a big game coming up this weekend home against Minnesota United. Let me hit you on the loons real quick before I let you go. Eric Ramsey, one of the new faces in Major League Soccer, a new face in first-team management. He is taking the plunge here in MLS, and so far the results are really, really good for Minnesota, Danny. What do you think about this young guy? How long are we going to see him in MLS?
I was pleasantly surprised with the first game that I covered away at Charlotte. They were absolutely brilliant. And I spoke to Eric Ramsey. I was fortunate enough, spoke to him before the game, and, you know, we had a really good conversation. And he was talking about, you know, obviously the way he sees the game, the way that he wants to do things. All of a sudden he turns up at Charlotte and I'm thinking, right, this is going to be interesting. I expected Charlotte to get the win. Their home form has been brilliant. They play direct football. They play off the second balls. All of a sudden you see Minnesota lining up Arriaga within a back three, sitting back, playing on the counter-attack themselves. And they did a number on Charlotte. I think the biggest thing is it's Reynoso. You know, that's the biggest thing. It's like you have to evolve now without him. That for me is the biggest thing. And I think for so long, it's probably been a case of, oh, well, you know what? It's fine because he's going to come back.
Yeah.
He was a difference maker.
It's almost like you had to evolve with him to force the evolution, you know, to sort of break your reliance on his otherworldly ability to be sort of the you know, the everything in terms of the way your team is created. You have to just say, like, we're leaving that behind because we have to.
Yeah.
Emmanuel, if you can fit in, amazing. If you can't, okay. And it just certainly seems like the choice has been that he won't. So
yeah, I don't think there can be any arguments in the moment. You know, you look at Ramsey, I think people will look at it and go, well, hang on, it's his first coaching job. He's what, 32 years of age? There's players within the team that are older than him. But you can see the respect was there instantly. He said the senior players have been absolutely brilliant. They've enabled me to settle. Obviously, Lawrence has come in with him. He's more of like the coach that will mix more with the players and things like that. But the game plan, you know, I can only go from a sample size that I've seen and I've covered. I was concerned about them going to Charlotte because the previous game they got beat at home by, I can't remember now who it was, but the fullbacks were so high for Minnesota. And I'm like, you do this against Charlotte, it's only going to end one way. And then all of a sudden, you see they're playing with a back three. The wing backs will go, but only when it's a necessity to go, the way that they were getting forward. The left wing back would go more so, the right wing back would tuck in, and they had this really good defensive stability. And Charlotte struggled to find an answer against them. And that was when I looked at it and thought, no, this guy 100% knows what he's doing. He sees where the problems are within his team. He's not a manager that's coming in and going, well, regardless of anything, we're playing possession-based. He's a manager, and these are the managers that I respect the most. Managers that come into a club and look at the roster, look at the squad that they've got and say, I know how I want to play, but at the moment, I have to play to my players' strengths. When we start to win games, when the summer comes and I've got some money to spend, then I can bring the pieces in that I want, brick by brick, and then I can put my style. The managers that fail are the managers that come into a club, try and play their style. Simple as that, and there's no other way, and it doesn't suit the players. So, you know, you've got a manager now in Eric Ramsey that's shown his ability to be able to alter the situation and the dynamics depending on what opposition decide.
Boy, that last part. There are some fan bases out in Major League Soccer that are nodding their heads and saying, oh, we see that right now. We're experiencing that. Let's in here and let's reverse it, because we've been talking about pressure a ton on all the different things that we're doing at MLS, because it seems to be that time of the year. You know, it's kind of like, I call it the Bermuda Triangle. You don't know who's going to get... you know, jumped up and grabbed here in these first 10 games, and the pressure gets heaped on. And then, like Kansas City and others, the Sounders, et cetera, before them, some escape and others go down in the triangle. How about above the playoff line? There's 9 slots per conference. You got good choice here. What's a team that's currently above but will end the season below, out of the playoffs?
I don't like doing this, but, you know, since you've asked me the question, I've got to do it. But I'm gonna do it in a way that I call a poo sandwich.
I had no idea where that was going. Not what I expected, but now my curiosity has piqued.
So it's the good, which is the bread. It's the little bit in the middle, which isn't so great, and then you finish it good. So first of all, DC United are the team that I look at and think they could have problems as in terms of the playoffs. Now Troy Lesane, really, really like him. Come from Red Bulls. Goes to DC United, you can see his identity straight away on this team. The way that the high press and the energy all over the team. Problem. Benteke is their top goal scorer. Benteke has been sensational this season. There's no other player in that team that's got more than one goal. And if you're going to make a solid run towards the playoffs, you need other players that are going to step up. So that's the bad bit in the middle. End bit is going to be, you know, summer's coming. That's not far away. That's around the corner. Will there be reinforcements? If they are, then I'm probably going to change my mind. But at the moment, the reliance on Benteke, as good as he is, if he gets suspended, if he gets injured, all of a sudden, you know, then you could be struggling for goals. And he's the focal point of this team. So that's where I'm at. And what do you think about that reference?
I'm still trying to come to terms with it. I have a 3-year-old and a 6-year-old, Danny. So, you know, I speak the language. So
that's it. That's why I had to say it.
Yeah,
it,
I speak the
obviously
language.
Another term.
I think that's
there's
right. I think that's right. Because look, you can always dress it up. You can find a way to make it better, and that's what the summer's for.
Yeah.
3-4 games in this league, and your position in the table can completely change. But I do agree with you. Over-reliance on Benteke. That I think that just based on the style of play and how advanced they get up the field, I think it's hard to hold on to leads. There's just a lot of opportunities for opponents to get into space behind them. That's the Eastern Conference. Out in the West, I got a couple nominations. One hurts my heart. I hope it doesn't happen. I just have worries about the Houston Dynamo in terms of goal scoring. I don't have any worries about them defensively from the standpoint of can they control games with the ball? They can do all of that. But maybe it's just because we haven't seen them consistently with Sebas Ferreira, and it's crazy to be saying that, hey, we got to rely on Sebas Ferreira after they didn't do so intentionally for an entire year, but more importantly, Ace Hector Herrera. So I have a little worry about Houston. I think they will make it. If I was going to drop one team out right now, I think it would be the Colorado Rapids. It's just lack of top-end talent.
Yeah, it's dependent on who you would speak to, I think, because I think football in general, you know, remember Sir Alex Ferguson, he said that, you know, strikers will win your games, defenders will win your titles. But I think the way in which the game is played in MLS, which is very, very transitional, it's end to end, it does end up about who can score the most goals. And I think, you know, your teams, especially the way that the DPs are, the majority of your DPs are forwards. So therefore, the likelihood is your DPs are going to get the better of the defenses. So it does come down to scoring goals. So on that scenario, yeah, I'd agree with that. And you know, that's what my pick was off. My pick was DC because of Benteke. So I'd be a hypocrite if I said, well, no, it's all about defenses, because I've shown that my thoughts are that it isn't.
And I believe that the Rapids and what they're doing is very real. It's just there's going to be, especially in the Western Conference, but I'm sure in the East as well, from about 5 all the way through 12 or 13, a dog pile. It's just going to be a complete dog pile. And every week you're going to go, well, oh, we jumped 2 spots. Well, we drew this week. We're down another spot. And it's all going to come down to decision day. And the Rapids, if they add a winger to provide some balance, because I think Kevin Cabral has something. It's not the ability to finish in the box, but it's certainly the ability to make games less easy to predict for back lines. If they have some balance on the right side, some goal scoring, I think they can do it. And then you would love to see another DP up top and maybe Navajo signed as a more of a reserve / spot starter. But, you know, maybe I'm getting too greedy there.
When you look at the East and the West, and I can only speak for a small sample size, probably like the last 3-4 years, I've not seen it more competitive than this. Where are you as in terms of, obviously we know about Inter Miami, but they're an anomaly. When you look at the majority of teams now, would you say that it is as competitive as ever, is in terms of who could actually get into the playoffs, who could challenge to get those home ties in the playoffs?
I think so. I think it just comes down to years and years of increased spending and increased quality. That doesn't mean that every team has done it the right way, but I think especially in the East, I just see a lot more quote unquote established projects.
Yeah.
Teams that have sort of built out an idea and are now in their second or third or fourth, or in the Union's case, many years beyond that, year of understanding who they are, what signings they make, how they want to play, and, you know, being really comfortable in that identity. In the West, it still feels to me like there's a lot of teams that are sort of like, well, this is a little bit new. You know, the Rapids, that's a little bit new. Minnesota United, that's a little bit new. The LA Galaxy, it is a little bit new. Even Vancouver being more of an elite rather than sort of in the pack is new. The only sort of old money I see in the West right now is LAFC, and then RSL making a jump from always good to potentially great. But again, RSL's jump, what does that come with? It comes with Chicho. You know, it comes with sort of a transformational player. What does LAFC's come with? Well, it comes with the squad. They have a lot of really good players. They don't get the credit they deserve, but it also comes from Denny Bawanga being singular. So, you know, there is an element. The Crew, we're talking on Wednesday. They're going to play tonight against Rayados. What fuels them outside of this incredible style of play and belief that Nancy has instilled is that they get the best out of Cucho.
Yeah.
There are commonalities here, and a lot of it comes down to talent, and that shouldn't be a surprise to anyone. Anyway, hey, I've taken 45 minutes of your time, Danny. It's
my
blown
pleasure.
By. It's blown by on this side. We are so thankful to have you here on Extra Time and also on MLS Season Pass. We'll enjoy that match in Miami with Red Bulls in town, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. You and Steve Cangelosi, thank you so much for joining me, man.
You're welcome, mate.
Thank you so much to Danny and Sasha for being so gracious with their time. That was a fun show for me. I hope it was for you as well. Any thoughts on guests for Thursdays? I am all ears. My DMs are open. You can get at me on Twitter as well. In the meantime, enjoy your weekend. Enjoy match day 12. Massive match down in South Florida, Inter Miami, hosting the New York Red Bulls, and much, much more. At 6:30 p.m. Eastern, we'll get you ready on MLS Countdown on MLS Season Pass. We'll roll right into MLS 360. Then at 12:30 p.m. Eastern, as always, MLS wrap up to get you all the highlights, all the biggest stories. You can watch it live or over a cup of coffee or breakfast on Sunday morning. All right, that's it for us. We'll see you on Monday. Adios. We'll be right back.